Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5-year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 5 of week number 24, studying Matthew chapter 24. As we begin, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. Two new resources are available at our free page. Check out John William McGarvey's sermon on baptism and listen to the 6-lesson audio series, The Beatitudes, The First Thing That Jesus Taught, a study of Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. You will find both of these resources linked and freely downloadable on the free page at internationalgospelhour.com. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. Text IGHFREE to 55222. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call toll-free 1-855-IGH-6988 for a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com to request that series. Let's get back into our study of Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, verse 1 tells us that Jesus went out and departed from the temple. As Jesus left the temple, his disciples came up to show him the building of the temple. Matthew does not tell us what specifically prompted the disciples' remarks about the temple, but as they, the disciples and Jesus, traveled toward the Mount of Olives, apparently to spend the night in that area, as Jesus did in Matthew 21:17, they would have proceeded out of the city upward toward Olivet, and the road they would have taken would have afforded them, as Wilkins notes, a spectacular view of the temple behind and below them. Both Mark's and Luke's parallel accounts indicate that the disciples, consistent with the majestic description that Josephus provided that we noted in our last lesson, that the disciples were quite impressed by what they would have seen. Mark records, "Then, as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, 'Teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here.'" Mark 13, verse 1. Notice their reference to the stones, something that Josephus accented when he mentioned their size. Luke's account reads, "Then, as some spoke of the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and donations." Luke 21, verse 5. Here, Luke records the disciples commenting not just about the size of the stones, but of their beauty. The temple, as Luke states it here, was adorned with beautiful stones and donations. Concerning the term rendered as adorned, Bach notes, "The verb that describes these features emotively highlights the respect felt for the temple." The disciples were, as were most first century Jews, enamored with the physical beauty of Herod's temple. And, of course, as Jews faithful to the First Testament teachings, they would have appreciated its spiritual significance as well. God came to dwell in Solomon's temple centuries earlier, and, as many no doubt assumed, God would continue to dwell there. Why did the disciples show Jesus the temple buildings? If nothing else, as the disciples saw them on their way out of town, they could not help but be impressed by the size and the beauty of the setting. And yet, in spite of all the grandeur, Bach tells us that the Roman historian Tacitus called the temple immensely opulent, in spite of all of that, Jesus said, "These things which you see," referring to the physical temple, "the days will come in which not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." On one of the many occasions when Jesus' antagonists demanded a sign, Jesus answered and said to them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." John 2, verse 19. How did Jesus' listeners respond? Then the Jews said, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days? John 2, verse 20. The next verse informs us that Jesus was not speaking about the physical temple, but rather the temple of his body. That context, as we just learned, used the word temple to apply to the physical body of Jesus. It would be destroyed in that Jesus would die on the cross, but after 3 days, Jesus would rise from the tomb. Here, however, the term temple applied to the physical place of worship in the city of Jerusalem. It too would be destroyed, and the signs and the timetable of its destruction was the central focus of Matthew 24. But unlike the body of Jesus' temple, the physical temple that gleamed so impressively in the sunlight, it would not be rebuilt. Not in 3 days, not in 1,000 years. To this day, nearly 2,000 years later, the temple still has not been rebuilt. One final thought before we move forward. Observe that the disciples came to Jesus to show him the buildings of the temple. Buildings, not building. Though the most significant part of the temple complex was the physical building, sometimes called the sanctuary, there were multiple elements that were part of the temple property as a whole, including gates, courts, halls, walls, the altar, all of the building blocks, as well as the sanctuary itself. In Matthew 24, verse 1, the text states that Jesus went out and departed from the temple. In context, that refers to the physical departure of Jesus from that place. But Jesus left the temple in another way as well. In the closing verses of Matthew 23, after Jesus had finished his scathing rebuke of the scribes and Pharisees who were hypocrites, Jesus turned his attention to the city of Jerusalem. Here, Jesus' words that, if we have not missed it, appear immediately before the start of this chapter, Matthew chapter 24. Jesus said, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, how often I wanted to gather your children together, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" Matthew 23, verses 37 through 39. As this reading starts, Jesus addressed the city of Jerusalem, calling her the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. It wasn't just the scribes and the Pharisees who jettisoned the way of righteousness. It was the city as a whole, the social, the political, the economic, and the religious city that was Jerusalem. Though Jesus expressed the desire to gather the inhabitants of the city together, as a hen gathers her chicks, they were not willing, verse 37. Jesus' concluding remarks in the chapter, "Your house is left to you desolate, and you shall see me no more till you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord,'" verses 38 and 39. What does it mean that your house is left to you desolate? There are translations that render the word house as temple. This one, "Look, there is your temple, forsaken by God and laid waste." And a second, "And so your temple will be abandoned and empty." The temple would be abandoned and become a spiritual wilderness or desert. That's what we encounter later in Matthew 24:15, where we read, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." The English words desolate in Matthew 23:38 and 39, and desolation in Matthew 24:15, both come from the same original root. The terms and their meanings are related. Jesus' departure from the temple property represents the end, or the soon-to-come end, of the role that the temple played in God's redemptive plan. When the southern kingdom of Judah was in captivity in the land of Babylon, the temple of Solomon was destroyed. The glory of the Lord that dwelt there from the time that that temple was completed and dedicated, the glory of the Lord left. Ezekiel writes this, "And the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city and stood on the mountain which is on the east side of the city." Ezekiel chapter 11, verse 23. It must not have been lost on Matthew's first century readers that the mountain on the east side of the city was where Jesus and the disciples were then heading, the mountain called Olivet. The glory of God left the temple and stood on that mountain, and Jesus, the ultimate glory of God, left the city of Jerusalem, left the temple, and was heading to that mountain. The gravity of Jesus' words would have been difficult to fully appreciate by the disciples. Jesus said, "Do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. These majestic stones, do you see how large they are? Do you see how the gold and the whiteness gleams in its beauty? Don't you know that the temple started here during the days of Solomon? Don't you know that God chose this place and no other place to put his name here? God chose Jerusalem? And you say that it will all be destroyed? Not one stone on top of another, all thrown down?" Yes, these thoughts might have rushed through the minds of the apostles. And yes, everything that Jesus said would happen to the temple and to the city of Jerusalem, it was going to happen. And that's why, as we mentioned in our earlier studies, Jesus was so cautious as he taught these truths. Be careful. Watch out. Do not be fooled. Do not be tricked. What I am telling you, many people will reject and or deny. Do not believe them. Believe me. If we grasp the enormity of what Jesus said in the first two verses of Matthew 24, the temple will be destroyed, and, though not expressly addressed in this verse, the city of Jerusalem too, then it will help us to understand not just the remainder of Matthew chapter 24, but indeed the remainder of the New Testament. What Jesus taught the disciples would have been perceived as blasphemous to the religious leaders. How do we know that? We will answer that question when, in our next broadcast, we take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew 24. These reminders as we close. To start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study by mail, call this toll-free number 1-855-IGH-6988. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.